You can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Matt Walsh, Brian Wolfmiller, and Hans Feeney at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. All paid registrants will have the ability to watch the conference live and on demand. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call 618-223-8385.
Marriage is a social justice issue for children. And if we are not doing marriage, if we're not encouraging men to commit to the women they're making babies with, regardless of their race, our society is doomed.
Giving cross-sex hormones to a patient with gender dysphoria and referring them for plastic surgery to alter their sex organs is the same as giving a patient with anorexia nervosa a strict diet and referring her for stomach stapling.
We should not revert to the old creation as Christians when dealing with race and racism, but let's live within the new creation that God has given as a gift to us through Christ.
And just as any little child crawls into the lap of its father to show where his hurts are or to list his complaints, that's what our Lord invites us to do.
Summer Greek students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, love listening to Issues Etc. while studying Greek.
It should come as no surprise that the abortion industry and abortion supporters in the political realm will resist tooth and nail even the most modest common sense attempts to even make abortion more safe. It's never safe for the child. It's lethal for the child, but safer for the mother. Certainly that's something the pro-lifers want. Those who support abortion really don't. And that resistance to these common sense kind of regulations and laws often leads straight to the U.S. Supreme Court. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Thursday afternoon, the 25th of June. We're going to be talking about an abortion case before the U.S. Supreme Court on a Louisiana abortion law and hospital admitting privileges. Dr. Michael New, visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America, will be our guest. After that, Hadley Arkus, professor emeritus of jurisprudence and American institutions at Amherst College, will be alongside. We're going to talk with him about a conservative response to the Supreme Court's ruling on transgender employees. He's got some very interesting ideas. The cause is not lost, he says, but we have to be careful how we go forward. Then we'll be remembering the presentation of the Augsburg Confession that took place on June 25th, 1530, the beginning of the Reformation. Dr. Detlef Schultz will be our guest professor of pastoral ministry and missions at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about an abortion case before the U.S. Supreme Court on a Louisiana abortion law and hospital admitting privileges, Dr. Michael New, visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America, associate scholar for the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Why is this case, June Medical Services v. Russo, an important case for the pro-life cause?
It's important for a couple of reasons. First, the pro-lifers want to enact common sense regulations of abortion facilities to protect women's health. This case requires that abortion doctors have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of the abortion facility. And I think that's just a common sense regulation to put in place that should something go wrong during the course of the abortion, the fact the abortion doctor would have admitting privileges would mean that he could communicate with doctors at the hospital and provide the best medical care to the woman. It's also an important case because it's the first major abortion case for two of our Supreme Court justices. Since the past few years, we've seen Justice Kavanaugh be confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we've seen Neil Gorsuch be approved for the U.S. Supreme Court. So obviously, we're very interested in to see how those two judges will vote. We have, I think, a sense of how others may vote. When you get people on the Supreme Court and they hear a case or a type of case the very first time, that's going to be of interest because it indicates how they may well vote in the future.
Why do the advocates for abortion and the abortion industry, why do they resist these kind of regulations and laws that would apply in any other situation medically? Why do they resist them?
Yeah, these are regulations put in place for a variety of kind of ambulatory surgical centers that, abortion facilities, aren't really being singled out here. I think that, the abortion industry knows that they have a lot of doctors that, frankly, are substandard, that many of the doctors who do abortions do not have good health and safety records. Very often, they cannot get admitting privileges in hospitals for that very reason. So I think you just see a lot of resistance that the abortion facilities want to be unregulated. They know they can't comply with all the basic common sense regulations. We can even see that in many states, they don't even do in-person checkups. What happened in Pennsylvania with Kermit Gosnell was tragic. There were women who died in this clinic, and the state health department never conducted an on-site inspection. So, again, I think they kind of realized that if they were subject to scrutiny, subject to regulation, that would have bad implications for them.
So give us a history of June Medical Services.
Sure. This was a set of regulations that was enacted by the Louisiana State Legislature in 2014 and signed into law by the governor. Not surprisingly, litigation followed, and it followed pretty quickly. Went to a district court, and the district court struck down the law. But then it was appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which upheld the law. And I think a lot of people, that's very important. So this set of laws, clinic regulations, has already been upheld at one point in this process. And the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals did uphold these clinic regulations. So that's potentially a good sign. It was then appealed to the Supreme Court. An injunction was put in place, so these regulations currently are not in effect. The oral arguments took place in March, and we should see a decision handed down very soon. There's a very good chance we'll know what the outcome is sometime next week.
Is it hopeful or not hopeful that the Supreme Court wanted to hear this case? They could have just let the lower court's ruling stand, couldn't they have?
Right, absolutely. I mean, typically, the fact that they did were willing to hear the case, I think, is potentially a good sign. Possibly they may want to, we'll talk about this later on, change the way they ruled in the Hellerstedt decision, which was the similar set of regulations put in place in Texas. Again, it's really hard to predict how the Supreme Court is going to rule, and it's hard to predict or explain fully why they choose to hear some cases, not others. I mean, many, many cases are appealed to the Supreme Court. They choose to hear a pretty small percentage of them. So I think the fact they did choose to hear this case is newsworthy.
So what is the difference between this case and what you mentioned before, Whole Women's Health v. Hellerstedt?
All right, so it's just circling back. In 2016, the Supreme Court heard a similar case involving clinic regulations in Texas, and they struck down those regulations. So here we are again 4 years later with a set of clinic regulations that involve Louisiana. But reading the decision that was issued by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, they found some differences, and I think these differences are important. First off, the state of Louisiana, I think, did a better job than the state of Texas demonstrating these regulations provide some health benefit. And their kind of research for the case and the oral arguments was found that abortion facilities in Louisiana don't really do much in the way of background checks on the doctors they employ. They do make sure these doctors have medical degrees and have current medical licenses, but beyond that, they don't do much. And I think that was one reason why the Fifth Circuit upheld these regulations. Secondly, the way these regulations are written, they're viewed to have a little bit less impact. They would impact fewer abortion facilities. They would impact fewer women. They're just drafted in a slightly different way than the Texas regulations were. And one thing the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals concluded was it wouldn't have quite the dramatic impact that the Texas regulations might have. So here they did find more of a health benefit, and I think there was some agreement amongst some judges on the Fifth Circuit that these regulations might have a little bit less of an impact.
Then what are the possible outcomes of June Medical Services?
There's a variety of outcomes. They'll kind of run through, I think, what are the most likely. One is that these clinic regulations are just struck down, and that would be a disappointment and a setback. Another outcome is they uphold the Louisiana clinic regulations, but don't really reverse their ruling on Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt. So they basically be saying that, what Louisiana did was fine, but the Texas laws, we were right to strike down, that there's actually a distinction between the laws or regulations in Louisiana and the regulations in Texas. So essentially, that'd be kind of a nuanced ruling, but it wouldn't necessarily be a bad ruling for pro-lifers, because at least you could look at what Louisiana did and other states to which do something similar could kind of follow that same playbook. Another ruling is that the Supreme Court might just come along and say, we ruled incorrectly back in 2016. They could overturn Hellerstedt, and that would give states a lot more ability to regulate abortion facilities. That would be a good outcome for pro-lifers. And I think a fourth outcome, which is kind of a wild card, but has been talked about, is that they could say that the abortion facility lacks standing. That if you want to sue over something, you have to show you've been impacted by a law. You just can't sue because you don't like a law. And some legal theorists have argued that abortion facilities who are trying to strike down clinic regulations really are not effectively representing the women going through abortions, essentially. So there's a chance that, the laws could be upheld on the grounds that the abortion facilities just lack standing. I think that's a bit of a long shot, but I think it is also a possibility.
Which of those outcomes do you think is most likely?
I really don't like to make predictions. One thing I say about predicting is that people make predictions, get egg on their face. That's my big prediction. Based on the way that the Fifth Circuit ruled and the fact that Roberts and Clarence Thomas and Justice Alito did vote to uphold the Texas laws, my personal hunch is that you're going to see a pretty nuanced decision. They're going to say that the Louisiana laws, these regulations, are a little bit different than what was passed in Texas. And they're going to say that we were right in 2016 by striking down the Texas regulations, but we'll uphold the Louisiana clinic regulations. So I think they're going to have a pretty nuanced ruling. I think that's my best guess, but it's very hard to predict. The Supreme Court can be very, unpredictable. They're very sensitive to the fact that there's an election going on. Personally, I think they should just make decisions based on the constitutionality of the laws and not worry about the political fallout. But again, I think you're going to see something probably pretty nuanced out of the court, would be my guess.
What would it mean for the pro-life movement if the Louisiana law were upheld?
I think that would be a very good sign for the pro-life movement. I think it would show that Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch are sympathetic to laws that would regulate abortion facilities. They might also be sympathetic to laws that would protect preborn children. So I think that would bode well for future cases involving abortion. So I think that would give us a great deal of optimism going into the current election cycle and beyond. Again, if they uphold these laws, I think it does show the pro-life strategy of passing incremental laws, trying to get better judges on the Supreme Court, is bearing some fruit, and it will continue to kind of bear fruit in the future.
What do you think it would mean for the pro-life movement if this law were struck down?
Obviously, it would be a disappointment and a setback, but I think it's very important that we not be too discouraged moving forward. No one promised us an easy or smooth trajectory to victory. Down the road, I'm sure the pro-life movement is going to lose court cases. Down the road, I'm sure we're going to lose elections. But one thing we've learned is that persistence does pay off, and that by litigating and relitigating, we often win in the end. During the 1970s, the Supreme Court struck down pro-life parental involvement laws more than once. They were finally upheld consistently in the 80s and 90s. They struck down a partial birth abortion ban in 2000. That was eventually upheld in 2007. So very often, by just relitigating and kind of coming up with revamped laws, we can get them upheld. So again, I think it's important to not despair. It may be a setback, maybe a disappointment. But one thing that's important to keep in mind is that states are very active passing pro-life laws. We passed over 400 state-level pro-life laws since 2010. Those laws are being litigated. We're going to have additional laws, being heard by the Supreme Court in the future. And there's always a chance they may strike down this set of clinic regulations, but uphold other laws in the future. So we shouldn't despair.
Generally speaking, then, Dr. New, why do you think there is reason for optimism on the part of the pro-life movement in the foreseeable future?
The reason why I'm always optimistic is because there's just a lot of trends are in our direction. We're doing well electing pro-life people to the state legislatures. We're seeing shifts in public opinion. One poll I always cite is that in the past, 1995, Gallup did a poll on abortion. It found that only 33% of people identified as pro-life. Their most recent poll showed that 49% identified as pro-life. That's a 16 percentage point gain. So we're making gains in public opinion. We're seeing abortion facilities close. We're seeing more and more pregnancy help centers open. And best of all, we're seeing abortion numbers fall. I mean, one statistic I give every time I'm on the air is that the abortion rate's fallen by over 50% since 1980. We've cut the abortion rate in half. And I think that really shows that a variety of things we're doing are effective, including passing protective laws, helping pregnant women through pregnancy help centers, and changing hearts and minds. So our educational, political, service activities have all been effective. And again, I think we have lots of reasons to be optimistic about the future.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America. He's associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and columnist for National Review Online. You'll find a link to the Charlotte Lozier Institute and to his columns at the Talk On Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Dr. New, thank you very much for your time. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to be spending some time with Hadley Arkus. He's a regular guest and professor emeritus of jurisprudence at and American institutions at Amherst College. We're going to spend some time with him talking about a conservative response to the Supreme Court ruling on transgender employees. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.